Howard Marks here.
Welcome to the next episode of the Graybeards on Storage podcast, the show where we get Graybeard storage bloggers to talk with system vendors to discuss upcoming products, technologies, and trends affecting the data center today. This Graybeards on Storage episode was recorded on February 20th, 2019. We have with us here today Tom Lyon, co-founder and chief scientist, and Brian Pawlowski, CTO of DriveScale. So Tom and Brian, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves and what DriveScale is doing these days?
Well, this is Tom. I fit right in with the graybeard theme because I've been out here in Silicon Valley for 41 years now, and I'm on my fifth startup. My first one was a little company I had the pleasure of joining as employee number 8, which went on to be known as Sun Microsystems.
Nothing important.
So that was good fun. I've had the startup fever ever since. So this is my fifth startup. Sold one to Nokia, sold one to Cisco. The one we sold to Cisco was Nuova Systems, and we were responsible for developing both some 10-gig switches, but also the UCS server product line. Yeah. And I was a founder there. DriveScale's been around about 5 years now, and we have lots of other interesting people here, like Brian.
Hi, Brian Pawlowski. My background is primarily storage. I started working on distributed file systems back when I knew Tom at Sun Microsystems, that small company in the 80s. But then I left there and was spent in a 21-year fit of lack of imagination, became employee 18 at NetApp, and worked at developing products for that company for a very long time. Spent some time at Pure Storage afterwards as chief architect, and then wanted to go back to my roots in a smaller company, and here I am at DriveScale.
So the startup fever's gotten to both of you guys.
Yeah.
So tell us what DriveScale is doing.
Well, we're doing what we call composable infrastructure, which is a term that's being adopted by a fair number of other companies now as well.
For a fair wide variety of things, too.
Yeah, so it's not quite gelled as a really good definition, but we keep trying.
Okay. What do you guys mean by composable?
What we mean is we let you compose what are essentially physical servers from component parts. And that's somewhat a difficult concept for some people. But, you know, historically, storage either came inside a server or it came as part of some complex storage subsystem. And that was how you separated storage. But more and more of those complex storage systems are just servers themselves with a whole lot of software. And if you want to look at simplifying servers overall, you really want to get the storage out of the server, but without putting it in just another server. And in fact, this is true for things beyond storage, so GPUs and FPGAs, and even memory eventually. So it's all about building far more flexible and efficient server infrastructure.
Okay, we have to come back to that.
Yeah, memory, networking, GPU, and stuff like that. That's all, you know, not all of that stuff is, I'll call it PCIe connected.
Well, no. And in fact, we're not pushing PCI Express as the interconnect. We're pushing plain vanilla Ethernet in its high-speed variations.
That's unusual in my mind for a composable infrastructure company, would you say?
Well, it takes a bit of understanding, but you have to understand what's really possible with networking and get beyond some of the belief systems that were never quite correct. You know, like Ethernet is high latency, just like that.
Well, some of those things were true 20 years ago.
Right, right.
Okay, so you guys let me allocate storage devices across some Ethernet fabric to servers dynamically.
Right. And so that's the base level of composability. Then there's another level of composability we have, which is basically constructing clusters for you from any number of servers of your specification so that you don't have to think about exactly which servers with which drives make up part of your cluster.
Okay.
So, I mean, clusters and stuff like that seem to me more of an operating system level function than a composable infrastructure function. So you actually operate across racks then?
Yes. what was I going to say? Yeah, a lot of what we do has to do with our target market space, which is not the mainstream VM world. We're going after the big data analytics scale out bare metal type things where they consume almost entirely direct attached storage. They rarely have a hypervisor involved.
And they almost always run Linux.
Problem. And they always run Linux. So it's a little different focus from a lot of things.
Most of those guys, run Hadoop or some variant of that sort of thing that kind of manages the cluster and the storage associated with each of the servers and stuff like that. How does your solution differ than something like an Hadoop environment?
Those are our client applications, basically. If you look at the world of software-defined storage, scale-out file systems, scale-out NoSQL, blah, 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 it's a whole new kind of way of writing storage systems. It's called cloud-native or stuff like that. And all of these things just want to consume direct attached storage. And those are our client applications.
Yeah, because they all build shared nothing clusters out of that direct attached storage.
Right. Or share. Yeah. The storage management happens in the application, and the replication happens in the application, and the snapshotting happens in the application. So I call these things application specific storage. And of course, what's interesting is the actual hardware drives, there's only three disk manufacturers left in the world, and there's only five or six SSD manufacturers.
You could argue 2.5.
Let's not go there.
And so the hardware is totally commoditized, but every single thing you put in the data path.
Wait a minute. You guys work with disks?
Absolutely. In fact, that we got started with disk, but now we've been shipping NVMe over Fabric product for about a year as well.
What's a disk look like at the end of an Ethernet cable?
Very much it looks like a disk that's inside your box, because we essentially are taking established reference architectures that use direct attached storage, embedded disk, and transparently replacing it. So these devices look like they're local. The applications need that locality because they've been designed to work efficiently with local disk. I mean, that runs the gamut of the Hadoop applications, the NoSQL architectures, and even the SSD-based applications like Aerospike. They all depend on this local architecture.
So you've got a disk driver that loads into Linux that attaches over Ethernet to the disk?
Yeah, it's called iSCSI, but don't tell anyone.
Oh, God.
It is. It is called. It's called iSCSI, unless, of course, you're running NVMe and you have end-to-end capabilities there, whereupon our system will just figure out what's the best thing and highest performance path between the two endpoints of the node in the cluster and its storage, which each node owns its own storage. It'll transparently choose between the optimal data path. But the thing that's interesting about the drive scale solution that I found interesting when I started was that I'm no longer actually working in a storage company. If you look at our composer and just make a quick cluster and associate compute with disk, you're not asked any questions about iSCSI. It never pops up in the dialogue.
God, you don't have to define iSCSI initiators and all this other, that the magic phrase that connects these things and all that stuff.
No, you don't know how to actually enable encryption on Linux boxes either, because we'll do that for you if you ask us to with a radio button. So it's all
I don't have to write 5,000 line chef recipes.
That's right. Yeah, and that's a key thing about our solution is we don't give you a spreadsheet full of LUN addresses to deal with. We actually do all the plumbing on the server side, so your cluster is ready to roll.
Okay, and now I was all confused.
Yeah,
about
I was
you guys.
Confused too. So what's it, so these disks are sitting out there in a JBOD or something like that? I mean, how do you must yeah, connect them through some sort of yeah. compute layer server thing, call it storage or something.
There's two approaches. The newer approach is through what we like to call EBODs, you know, Ethernet connected JBODs.
EBODs? I never heard of EBODs.
You can in some ways these are just servers with lots of drives, but they're also moving towards being specialized processors, just like NVMe targets are moving towards specialized processors.
Sure, because just processing iSCSI and forwarding requests without actually building an array, you could do that in an SoC.
Yeah. And so that's also what we do. We have a hardware product. We actually have two hardware products, but we have what we call the DriveScale SAS adapter, which is basically doing very dumb, cheap, fast Ethernet to SAS conversion. So you put that in front of a stock SAS JBOD, and you're done.
Huh. And what's the other hardware?
Our other hardware product.
It's essentially an iSCSI bridge, right?
Yeah, it's an iSCSI bridge, and it's based on a right. It's based on a Broadcom network processor, so it's really very good at what it does. But you know, people like to have lots of choice of hardware, so we're supporting quite a variety of other kinds of hardware.
God, I always thought. Composable infrastructure was, you know, take you know, one or two or three CPUs and their associated DRAM and attach it to one or two NVMe SSD kinds of things and add in some GPUs and or networking hardware, and you have this logical server that you've defined.
So our testing right now for composability is to basically allow you to manage 10,000 nodes to 100,000 disks, either SSDs or spinning, and manage them as one or more clusters, which contain a web scale application, Aerospike, SillaDB, Cassandra database for NoSQL work, the Kafka, the Hadoop stuff. Things.
Kind of almost like you're building your own cloud here, building your own public cloud.
Well, it's orchestration at a different layer.
Yeah, we're focused on making servers simpler and more generic, which is something you really have to do if you want to pretend you're a cloud. It's just a piece of what you have to do, but you can't. The notion of buying application-specific hardware is just wrong these days, and yet people are still buying, you know, server type A for application one, server type B for application to server type C for application 3.
And then when you pull back the covers, yeah.
All these silos, none of which are fully utilized, but there's no sharing possible because you bought different things.
Oh, and so much of it is sequential use. So this cluster processes data and then the next one picks right. it up. And if I could recompose, I could use one set of servers instead of right. three. But it takes 2 days to set it up.
So in our architecture, you buy one type of device to be your servers, one type of device to hold your hard drives, one type of device to hold your flash drives, and then you combine as needed. And when it comes time to move resources between applications, it's easy because they're all on the same pools anyway.
It's all driven by API and or, you know.
Yeah, so we have a central management system, which is where all the smarts are. And it's 100% API driven.
Yeah, I want to step back a second. So after our pleasant conversation about hardware, we're a software company, and our the beans we have that are important are in our orchestration and management of basically clusters at scale, commodity hardware, commodity node, compute nodes, commodity disk. When Tom said there's, you buy server A configuration for application one, server B configuration for application two, you pull back the covers on those things, same CPU complex, just different amounts of storage in it, and either spinning disk or SSDs, but often restricted to what that compute vendor has qualified and has defined for their platform. And you may want to kind of like, you might, wow, you know, I don't really need the performance of these small form factor drives. I just need the capacity of something that's just the kind of the big, the 3.5 inch drives, but I can't get a configuration out of the vendor for them. We're like, well, why don't you pick and choose the compute, which is going to be the same across most of your applications. Maybe you'll have two different ones, a low-end node and a high-end node, and then mix it with the storage that you really require for that application.
So where do GPUs fit into this cluster world?
Well, they're more difficult because there's no such thing as a network-native GPU yet. And we're not investing in any hardware to do that, but we're talking to a lot of interesting companies that are doing, you know, relevant things. Still not quite that, but it'll happen. In the case of memory, there's another company out there doing, you know, conjoining multiple nodes over the network to be one big SMP system. So that's an example of composing memory things.
Talk about non-uniform.
But part of our strategy is to make sure the performance is, you know, to offer transparent performance so that there's no real cost to putting stuff outside the box. And that's not quite possible with GPUs. It's nowhere near possible with memory, except for a few interesting cases.
No, but with NVMe over Fabrics, it's close enough for flash SSDs.
NVMe over Fabrics, it's awesome for SSDs. And in fact, even without NVMe over Fabrics, the SSDs are so fast and the network are so fast that the bottleneck shifts back to the database software or whatever kind of software you have. And the Fabrics part was probably not all that necessary yet.
So the disks that are attached to this EBOD are RAID structured or not? Or you know, is there any data protection or is it all at the application level? Is it kind of like Hadoop would be replication or something like that?
It's individual disks as God intended.
It's application specific, right? So when you're running Hadoop makes its three copies of things the way it does. And that's the data protection.
So your orchestration is smart enough to put the three copies from this cluster in three separate BODs?
Yes. And in fact, in three separate racks, if you want that kind of thing. So we have a placement plugin for HDFS that lets you control all that. And it talks to our system, which knows the underlying topology of all these things. But then back on the RAID question, there are systems that really want a RAID protected volume, even though they're scale out. And for that, we can turn on RAID, but we do it on the server side because it's easy, it works great, and it gets you even more protection because now the two halves of your mirror can be in different racks as well.
Right, and the important thing here is that the application was already designed to work with local disk and uses RAID locally on a per node basis. And some people are deploying 50 nodes, and some people are deploying 500 nodes. And if they're using RAID, the RAID being run at the compute nodes to local disk outperforms aggregating a lot of IO workload into a RAIDed system at the end of a pipe, where basically you're hammering it, you're consolidating workloads to a single pinch point at a RAID device at the end of the pipe. We're basically just providing disk access with an extension cord, but very flexible configuration capabilities. And then if you want RAID, we specify it during the cluster creation, and we'll take care of all the stuff that has to be done in Linux to make that work correctly. You really don't touch the Linux storage stack or the application storage stack. You just basically say, look, this is what I want it to look like in the end, and I want 100 of them. They're all the same. This is what these web scale applications are about. Cookie cutter similarity, one node fails out of 100, nobody really cares,
Right. That's the whole idea.
And it's like, God doesn't notice a single sparrow, but when 10 sparrows fall out of the sky, he might get interested, right? So
I don't speak for him.
Yeah. No.
Or her, for that matter.
Yeah. Now there's certain characteristics that are hard to achieve when you take the storage out of the box, right? So performance is one. And we go through great pains to do load balancing of network links and make sure everything is whizzy and efficient. Similarly, for availability, we do all the multipathing setup for you. Typically, between a server and a JBOD, there's like 8 different paths in our system. And so we're pretty smart about all this stuff you expect from a storage system, only it's all being done on the server side of the fence, because that's where you're capable of running all this software, and it already exists in Linux, if only you knew how to use it.
And the networking between these nodes is 10 gig Ethernet?
For disk, we require at least 2 10 gigs per server, and then our little bridge box does 8 times 10 gig throughput. For NVMe, we really suggest 2 by 25 gig per server, and the boxes typically have 200 gig ports on them.
Targets. And are you using something like Rocky?
We support Rocky. Rocky V2 is what most people are sporting. But we're eagerly looking forward to NVMe over TCP, which is coming very, very soon.
Yeah, it does fit your model very well, doesn't it?
Yeah. And in the meantime, we support iSCSI for flash access, because there's so many people who just cannot deploy.
Right.
As it stands today. I mean,
so So to provide flash to this, I use an NVMe over Fabrics JBOF.
Right.
Are you still treating each SSD as an independent entity, or?
You can.
Do you support multi namespace SSDs and slicing and dicing and julienning?
We do support slicing, and we also support assigning the whole thing. Again, for something doing its own data protection, you have to be very clear on where the data is relative to other slices. So slicing makes that a little more complicated.
Yeah, assigning three slices from the same SSD to three Hadoop hosts would not end well.
Right. And so that's something we make sure people can deal with. But yeah, we slice SSDs because that's a very low cost thing to do compared to slicing hard drives, where the head is competing.
Well, I don't want you to slice hard drives. I'm going to thrash the heads into their little shreds.
Right, right.
Or unless it's SMR and it's all that other stuff, but that's a different discussion.
Well, then it'll even be worse.
Yeah. And hard drives, cost a couple of $100. You have these, if you want to buy at the sweet spot of flash, you're talking, $5,000. So
right.
Sharing
I definitely want to buy 2 and 4 terabyte SSDs, because the cabinet costs and there's plenty of IOPS there.
Right, right.
So, I mean, how do you guys differ? I mean, I hesitate to say that there are plenty of startups and at this point, even some major vendors that are offering NVMe over Fabric kinds of solutions for their SSDs. You seem like you've got that embedded. You've added the disk side. I'm trying to understand where your value prop is
I guess you've found our flaw, and so we can go home now.
I'm sure there's something there. I'm just not seeing it.
I was thinking you were consuming that, not providing it.
I think if you opened up our orchestrator and looked at how you work with our composer, you would look at it and coming from a storage perspective would be immediately surprised, because the first thing you're asked to select is the number of compute nodes in your cluster. And you can say what characteristics of the nodes are, how many cores, how much memory, and set constraints around it. That's your first step. So big differentiator here is we're not talking about providing random endpoints of NVMe storage. we start with basically the high level view of what does the application need to run on? And that's a cluster. It's a set of compute nodes with each with their own storage. And you define the number of nodes, and then you define the amount of storage per node and type of storage, typically just spinning disk or flash, but it might be fat drives versus high performance small form factor drives. And then you hit a button, and we basically do all the work of immediately whipping up a 100 node cluster to a specification that replaced the process of purchase time definition on somebody's website, where you were defining how much CPU you needed and how many storage bays you needed in a local node that you were deploying, except now you're just doing it on the fly. A very important part of our solution is that we understand both the compute and the storage side of things. So we have a distributed composable solution. The first thing you do when you install our software, because we're a software company, is basically install our agents on the compute farm, install our storage adapter agents on the adapters for the JBODs, and then bring up our composer. And the first thing everybody does is report in with an inventory of all the resources they auto-discovered. This is basically simplifies the entire prospect. One of the things I'm hearing about the NVMe over Fabric stuff, there people are presenting a box. Here's a box of NVMe over Fabric storage. And then it's like, well, what do you do to use that? Well, you go onto your servers and glue them together. We do all that for you. We auto-discovered it, and we basically defined your pool of available resources. You're just clicking buttons at that point. In a sense, what we've done is virtualized bare metal hardware, except for the lack of VM that we don't want to use, that the applications don't need.
Yeah, the only part you're not doing I really want is to select and put this on a private VLAN.
Yeah, that's not far away. We actually have a customer who uses VLANs to separate our traffic from other stuff. And that's something we could automate with the right API to the switches, but it hasn't been a big deal yet. So we don't view any of that as out of our purview. It's basically when do we get around to it?
And so you guys have been in the market for a while now, a GA-ish kind of
couple of years. Market.
Okay. A couple of years you've been GA?
With the disk product. And and of course, disks aren't terribly sexy anymore, so it's hard to get press about that. But the other place where this makes a huge amount of sense is in object storage, because within a cluster, if a server fails, you can take the data that's still on the disks and attach that to different servers.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite attributes of composability.
Yeah, so now if you want to build a cold storage system, you can have 300 hard drives talking to two servers, and you still get HA, and it's plenty fast enough, and you know it's a whole different price point.
No, and if I have a cluster of 16 servers and one of them fails, I can reattach those perfectly good working hard drives to the replacement server without having to move all the data.
Is that something that your orchestrator does automatically, or is that something that somebody would have to step in and issue commands to?
It turns out the hard part of that is deciding when something has failed. And as I'm sure you guys appreciate from countless years. But what's really beautiful is in Kubernetes has a standard way of deciding that a server has failed, or at least a container. And so we have a complete Kubernetes integration where if the server fails, Kubernetes spins up a container somewhere else, and the storage is immediately reattached to it, and off you go.
So it's all persistent volume claims and all that other stuff is automatically moved. Is that?
And so it's a very elegant solution for Kubernetes, because you get direct attach, performance and cost without the pain of being locked into a server.
Is this with Bosch? Or because a lot of the availability characteristics of Kubernetes are fairly rudimentary until you get something like Bosch underneath it.
Yeah, well, that Bosch solves a lot of other interesting problems, but at the assuming you can make Kubernetes work at all, which is still not true of everyone.
There are many instances of Kubernetes working in the world today.
Yeah, but not everyone who tries succeeds.
But persistent storage applications in Kubernetes is the emerging front. That's not where they started.
Yeah, I mean, with their new container storage interface and stuff like that, some of that stuff is becoming a little bit more realistic and usable.
Right, and but if you think about the persistent storage applications, that if you combine, this is why composability makes sense. If you had captured DAS within the nodes, when the node went down, the storage went down with it because it was also the storage provider. So separating out the storage from the compute allows you to do this basically persistent storage migration to a new compute node without any actual movement. And by the way, since we're basically supporting the same type of commodity disk or SSDs that these applications were optimizing around anyway, you don't have to go down the path of an expensive enterprise RAID array who has capabilities that are of no interest to the application who's already defined the storage stack that's running on top of Kubernetes.
Debatable, but yeah, I understand your, I mean, obviously the containers don't understand that stuff and don't necessarily use it, but whether they could take advantage of it is a different question.
Well, it depends on the application in the container.
Yeah, our product is a great complement for some of the emerging container native storage, things like Minio or OpenEBS or, you know, Gluster and even Ceph. You know, you run all that software in containers, but now it attaches to the raw storage outside the server.
And that means we can do things like fire up more controller containers because we're doing a large ingest and there's a lot of CPU needed for the
pods, right? I mean, you're talking Kubernetes, so you're firing up pods and the pods are deciding how many containers to run based on the service that's being requested and things of that nature, right?
Well, it goes back to what I said at the beginning, you know, storage these days is, you know, 99% software. So why aren't you running that software in containers using, you know, modern best of breed type practices?
So your orchestrator runs on those containers, is that what you're saying?
Not yet, but the it wouldn't be hard.
But our integration with Kubernetes provides a framework for container management, but it doesn't provide a framework for hardware management. So we're definitely the underlayment for the infrastructure for something like Kubernetes, and we are not putting together a container management system. What we are putting together is a hardware management system that supports, you know, separating the life cycle of compute upgrades from storage upgrades, which has always been different for many applications and continues to be different, but then allows you to run your container applications and your container management system cleanly on top of it. But from the perspective of those spectres of Kubernetes, we still look like the swarm of Linux commodity compute servers that people are adopting wildly.
You mentioned updates and upgrades and stuff like that. So your three hardware solutions can be upgraded independently? I mean, is like a rolling upgrade kind of thing? Or so let's say you, being a software company, of course, you actually change your software on occasion.
Yeah. So our hardware is all multi-path to the storage. So and then our SAS adapter, there's actually four independent controller blades that use them in parallel to talk to a JBOD. So if you have to upgrade one of them, that you're losing 25% of the capacity that you probably don't notice.
But since you guys don't control the on-disk data format, we don't have to worry about an upgrade requiring a change to the on-disk data format.
Right. The on-disk data format is controlled by the storage stack in the application itself and on the Linux client. There's no requirement on the other end for any high-level functions because they're originally designed to run over raw disk.
And in fact, we have a cluster scale encryption at rest feature as well, so that by the time we ever see the data, it's been encrypted coming out of the server. And we do all the key management to make that really, really simple.
And it's software encryption at the server level as it's coming off the across the network and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Yep. Because you're, you know, I've been through this for years at one company. Every time we came up with a hardware accelerator for encryption, the number of cores increased in the general purpose CPUs and the storage controller that actually led it to provide higher encryption rates than the dedicated encryptor. For the time spinning boards, we were not keeping up with the pace of the number of cores of increase. So, and again, you're distributing, you know, you mentioned the like 16 node cluster before. That would be a very small cluster for us. We start getting kind of like interested when there's 50 nodes, because now you have a complexity of management problem, and you have 7 applications all using different configurations. And so now you're somewhere in a few hundred nodes deployment, but you're looking for something that allows you to simply order 1 or 2 compute SKUs, not 7 different configurations, and 1 or 2 storage SKUs, mix and match vendors, optimize your costs, and then basically create these things on the fly when you need them. Now, when you create them on the fly, by the way, they probably will persist. People aren't destroying, if they have a big data application up and running,
they're not going to move a petabyte of data or something like
that. They're more likely rolling off a petabyte of data every period because new data came in, because they're persistent with a time frame and the expiration date of like interesting information for ad placement, like one of our customers does, is about a 90-day window, because your interest may change, and that currency is very important for selling an ad placement service, right? So the data is going to peel off, but there's always this sliding window of data in it. And for database applications, you may have a much longer persistence around the data for these scale out applications.
As far as caching is concerned, all that would be done at the host application layer. You don't have any cache in any of these EBODs, JBOFs, or anything like that.
Yeah, the it turns out when you're dealing with the block level, the host is really good about caching.
Well, the host knows a lot more about what it's doing than you do.
Right.
Or can.
So, but, you know, all of main memory is a cache, you know, for Linux.
So the other question is, and these JBOFs and stuff like that, do customers purchase the JBOF and they have their own storage they insert in it? Or is your EBOF or EBOD, does it come with disks as well? Or?
So we don't sell any storage.
Okay, so the customer buys the storage independently, right, and plugs it in.
More likely our partner or system integrator working with the customer is providing a optimized solution.
Right, and if I can switch to business mode for a little bit, our number one partner is Dell. They resell all of our stuff. We are in their tier one reseller program, so the entire worldwide sales force, in theory, knows about us. And we sell mostly with their hardware, you know, their JBODs and servers and switches, that kind of stuff. Additionally, Western Digital is a very good partner. They have a line of JBODs and JBOFs, and they have, they're being very outspoken now about the composable infrastructure strategy and opportunity. So we're working very closely with them.
Yeah, they surprised me when they came out with the NVMe over Fabrics,
right,
to access spinning disks.
Yeah,
JBOD.
They got an NVMe over Fabric bridge.
It's a 12 drive 1U JBOD with an NVMe interface.
Right, which they may not make it to product status, but they're definitely going to do some drive based things. But we have in house their flash based product, which is quite a beast. It can hold a lot of flash.
So, I mean, do you guys have a lot of customers that are, what's a typical configuration? You mentioned 50 nodes as being of interest, but you've talked about 10,000 node environments as being really interesting. So what's an average installation for your solution?
We can't really,
such a thing exists.
Yeah, we don't have enough active customers to have a decent average, I think. But we're in a lot of POCs, and it's a very long cycle, because even if they love us, that we need to get synced up with a major hardware purchase. But we're talking to companies that average 50,000 servers in their fleet, kind of thing.
Right. But our deployments now are at one customer is in the hundreds of nodes and thousands of disks. I mean, this is why and hundreds approaching 1,000 nodes. The reason that I mentioned the 10,000 nodes and 100,000 disks is that this customer continues to grow their deployment, and we have to be able to basically manage this at scale and manage it through the life cycles and keep going and be durable and performant at that size.
10,000 nodes, 100,000 disks. We're talking Google kinds of levels.
No, this is nowhere near Google, but
Google has more zeros.
Okay, orders of magnitude bigger. Okay, I got you.
But there's a lot of the cloud native companies, things that have popped up in the past 15 years or so, where they're really exercising the limits of big data and hardware, and even people like Uber have a gigantic amount of data infrastructure.
Well, this has been great. Howard, any last questions for Tom or Brian?
Not really a question, but I find it interesting to compare this to what some other vendors call composable infrastructure, where it's, you can take any drive in this blade chassis and assign it to any blade. And you guys are saying you can take any drive in this data center and assign it to any server.
Yeah. You basically hit the nail on the head on that one. So
it makes a lot more sense at the data center scale than it does at the blade chassis scale.
It makes sense at the data center scale when you're looking at the applications that are starting to sprawl across the floor, doing analytics and these NoSQL databases. Aerospike just, I believe, increased their last year increased their maximum deployment of their SSD memory database from 100 node scale out to 500 node scale out, I believe the numbers are. That they're selling these things, right? So these are far beyond, these are far, oh, Bukowski, yeah, he's my cousin. No, this is beyond blade center management. If that's somebody's definition of composable for blade center management, then they are unable to handle the real applications we're seeing customers deploy now.
All right. So, Tom and Brian, anything you'd like to say to our listening audience before we close off?
Well, surprisingly enough, we have our own website, so come check it out.
So drivescale.com, I guess?
Yep.
Okay. Well, this has been great. Thank you very much, Tom and Brian, for being on our show today.
Thanks for having us.
Next time, we'll talk to another system storage technology person. Any questions you want us to ask, please let us know. And if you enjoy our podcast, tell your friends about it, and please review us on iTunes and Google Play, as this will help us get the word out. That's it for now. Bye, Howard.
Bye, Ray.
And bye, Tom and Brian.
Bye.
Bye-bye.